Welcome back to another episode of the Daily Unicorn mini podcast, in which every day I pick one person at random and answer your questions. Now, if you want to be featured on one of these calls, just go to my last Instagram post, whatever it is, and comment. Tell me what you want to talk about, what questions you have. Could be fitness, business, muscle gain, fat loss, unicorns, rainbows, sparkles, coffee, anything. Whatever you want to talk about, let me know and I'll go through and you could be featured on the next call. Now, today I talked to a really awesome guy. His name is Nick Reese. Phenomenal guy, phenomenal coach. He's in the inner circle and he brought up a really good topic of discussion, which is basically based around behavior change and specifically how to motivate someone to work out when they don't do anything already. A lot of times this is with a lot of our family members, a brother, a sister, a cousin, mom, dad, whatever, someone you really care about who isn't doing what they need to do to stay healthy, and you're concerned, you're worried, and no matter what, even though they know they should be doing it, they're not eating right, they're not working out, they're not taking care of their fitness. So in this episode, him and I talk about that and go into very deep psychological strategies and motivational tools to help the people we love start to work out and take care of their health. I hope you enjoy it. Hope you like it. Please rate it, leave a comment, let me know what you think. I will talk to you soon. Nick.
Hey, brother, what's going on?
What's up, my man? How are you?
Good. How you living?
Dude, I'm good. It's funny. So we are recording right now. I know we're in a little bit of a jam, but I those iPhone pods, like those, like, are like the earphones that are wireless?
Yeah.
Dude, I have them in my ears because I put them in because I was just about ready to record, and then, like, they weren't working, and I realized they're completely out of battery, so I'm just doing this on speakerphone. I'm an idiot. Like, I always forget to charge this thing. How are you doing, man?
Good, man. It's good. I texted one of my friends who works, like, there's a physical therapy office next door. I was like, you don't have headphones by chance that I can use, do you? They're like, I have both pairs. I'm like, fuck yeah.
You are the prepared one, and I'm the one running the podcast. It is not good news. Well, dude, thank you for getting on. I appreciate it, especially on such short notice.
No problem. Thank you.
For everyone listening, what time is it? I'm on the West Coast, so what time is it for you?
Oh, okay. It is 10 a.m.
10 a.m. Got it. So 7 a.m. me, 10 a.m. you. So really short notice. Thank you. And basically, so Nick, you brought up a really good topic. I said in the inner circle the other day, I wanted to just talk to a bunch of people about various, whatever you guys had questions about. And could you just, like, reiterate what your question was, what you wanted to talk about, and we'll jam on it?
Yeah, definitely. So my biggest thing, kind of how I feel my life, just everything going, is getting people from the point where they're not being healthy at all, and then what's that barrier to get them to get to the next step? So I'm not talking about people that are, like, already in the gym, that are already trying to eat healthy. Like, you're at home, you're doing nothing. You see a commercial on Facebook or on Instagram, and you're like, okay, I want to start. Like, I feel like that isn't really stressed enough in fitness, is how do we get people to just start? Like, you can't just go to the gym and walk around. Like, first time going to a gym is extremely intimidating. So I want to, you know, hopefully figure out a way and just help people get from, like, couch to the gym.
Got it. Okay. Well, I mean, so do you have any examples of people that you know who are in that situation, or people that you have helped through that situation?
Yeah, definitely. So I have a few clients. I guess one of my kind of first clients, I'll mention her. Her name is Daisy. We worked together a long time ago, and it was kind of that thing, you know, she's a business owner, she's in town, and she just didn't have the time, like, you know, eating out all the time, you know, fast food, that type of thing. And so kind of what we did, even before she started coming in to work out, was like, okay, take one meal a day and just try not to eat like an asshole for that one meal. And then try to do two meals, and then, you know, kind of park further away, take a little extra time, like 10 minutes, maybe go on a walk with your family, things like that. And then once we kind of set in the motion of once you feel better, then it's like, okay, let's go walk in the gym now. So that way you get kind of comfortable in the atmosphere, and then slowly migrating her towards where she is now. We've been working together for years now, but now she's set. Like, the gym is part of her life. But it was one of those things where it wasn't always like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I love that. Now, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. So how did she get in contact with you? Like, how did you guys get linked up to do coaching?
She just reached out to me.
So she reached, because she said, I'm looking to improve my health in some way. She's like, I need help.
Yeah.
Got it. So what's really interesting and important, you bring up a really good point. Basically, when we first started talking, you were like, well, how do you get the person who, like, doesn't know what to do, who is in the gym, who might not be asking for help? How do you do that? But then really what did is she reached out and asked for help. And the way you walked her through it was fantastic. I think starting with nutrition was the best move before even trying anything in the gym. I think starting with nutrition is king. But there's a really important and overlooked point of behavior change, which is essentially what we're talking about, is
right. That
the first person you spoke about, which was the person who isn't even really asking for help yet, the person who's just sitting on their couch, that there are many stages of change depending on, like, which model you look at. Like, I tend to look at one that says there's 7 stages. There are some people who are sitting on the couch and they're not actually ready to change yet. They're not at a point where they even think there's a problem, or even if they do know there's a problem, they aren't at a point where they're ready or willing to ask for help or to make a change. And the difference is your client, she reached out to you, which, by the way, it doesn't mean that she'll inherently follow it, and it doesn't mean that she'll follow through. There are a lot of people who will start and stop and start and stop, but there's, I think, a really important point that a lot of people, I did for a long time, and sometimes I still do, is that if you try and force someone who isn't actually ready to change by, a lot of people, for example, what they'll do is they'll try and guilt them. They'll be like, oh my God, come on, do this for in whatever way. There's a lot of ways to guilt. You could say guilt in the form of, do this for your kids. Like, you don't want them to be embarrassed, or you want to watch them walk down the aisle. There's those types of guilt.
Yep.
And then there's the other guilt of, like, you know, you're killing your body. Like, you only get one body. There's that. And then there's the getting angry and the getting mad and yelling at them. And a lot of people try and force people into this change, and they're not ready for it. And that's okay. I think that, aside from just being aware that some people might not be ready for change, one of the best things that we can discuss that you started about was, well, how do you get one of those people who might not even be asking for help, who might not even be in a point where they're really ready to change? How do you progress them to change?
Right.
You know, like, I think that's a discussion that most coaches are not having.
Right. Right. And I think,
Have you had experience with that? Have you had experience with someone who literally, like, was not at a, whether it's a family, a lot of times that's a family member.
Yeah.
Because as a coach, someone really is only coming to you unless, if they're, like, asking for help specifically. So have you had a family member like that?
Yeah, pretty much everybody in my family kind of, like, right, like, recently, within maybe the past 6 months to a year, I've had people kind of, you know, come with me and just start doing something, but I'd always be like, hey, maybe instead of eating barbecue or getting something, you know, to go for our family outing, like, why don't we have, like, salads, or let's have some fruit, you know, let's still drink and have fun, but let's not make everything, like, super bad. And it's like, well, you know, this is a special occasion. I'm like, yeah, but it's every day. And most of them, I get pushback all the time. And I'm like, you know, and given my family history, like, you know, my parents passed away when I was younger from just poor health. And I'm like, you literally see this happening. Like, one day a week can make so much difference. Why don't you just do it? You know, it's all the excuses. And that's kind of where I run into it, because I see them, I see how they're living, I see what they're eating, I see them not moving. And I'm like, you know, I literally take away every barrier, but they're still, like, they're not open to it.
Dude, I get it. I 100% get it. And this is one of the things that really interests me from a psychology perspective of how do you get someone to move from, we'll call it position zero, right?
Yeah.
They're like stage zero of like, they don't know, or they literally know like it's not healthy. They know the dangers, but for whatever reason, they're just not doing it. How do you get them from there to a point of actually doing something? And what's really interesting is that some people will go from stage zero to stage seven immediately. Like they'll just immediately be like, I'm doing this, like complete cold turkey. And like, whatever it is, maybe they went to the doctor and they'll say, hey, listen, you're pre-diabetic. If you don't change something immediately, you are literally going to die, like whatever. And that'll be enough. Or sometimes they'll hear that and it won't change anything still. So it's very interesting to me, the difference in psychology, the difference in what's going on. And the reality is there's no way to really predict what's going to work with what person and why and how. It's very all over the place. And I think there is research on it, but it's not definitive at all. What generally seems to be the most understood concept is there are some people who literally don't know like that whatever they're doing is bad for them, right? There are some people. So, I mean, at this point, if we use smoking as an example, there's nobody in the world who doesn't know that smoking is bad for them. That's just, or if there is, we'll pretend there isn't. If there like is a very small percentage, but exactly. There's nobody in the world. And telling that person, hey, do you know that like smoking is going to kill you, is the stupidest, most ineffective way to get them to change, because they already know that. You're not giving them any new advice. You're not giving them any new information. It's more patronizing. It's like, you realize you could get lung cancer or emphysema, or have you seen those commercials with the lungs or whatever? It's like, all right, thanks a lot. Shut up. But the people who don't know that something is actually dangerous for them, giving them knowledge, teaching them in an educational way can be very helpful about what's going on in terms of what the dangers are, those associated risks. And that can be sometimes why someone would go from position zero to either position one, two, three, or literally cold turkey to seven, whatever. But the other thing is, if someone does have the knowledge already, rather than giving them more knowledge, it's figuring out how to appeal to them on more of an emotional level. And that is where really, really number one, high level coaching comes in. And a lot of times it's hard because we usually have these experiences with family members, and you need to take your emotion and your bias out of it, which is very difficult with family members.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you just want to say, what the hell are you doing? Why are you doing this? You would never say that to like a client that you just met. But to your family member, it's just like you care about them so much and you're so passionate about it. You're like, what are you doing? You're like, you're so angry. And getting mad at them is not the way to do it.
Yeah.
So one thing that would be interesting, I would love to hear if you wanted to give it a try, is
definitely.
I mean, this would be very interesting, and it would be definitely towing a boundary. So feel free to not do it. But one thing that would be very interesting for me is if you were to bring someone essentially running an intervention, but not necessarily like sitting down in a big circle and being like, please, we want you to do this. You could do that if you wanted to, but bringing someone else in, bringing an outside party in, and essentially putting them in a situation where, hey, listen, this is not Nick talking to you. This is not your brother, your cousin, whatever. Like, this is me talking to you as a professional. And I'm going to tell you, number one, like, you, and like, be straightforward. Listen, you know the health risks. I'm going to break it down for you in very practical terms, like break down what the health risks are. I would make that a very short part of the picture because they already know it, and then go into more of like more from the emotional side of how they can actually start to implement it immediately, and really painting the benefits of what they would get from starting it. I think that's where most people really miss out on this behavior change stuff, is they tend to highlight the,
it's all good. I hope they're okay.
I know, me too. they tend to highlight the negative stuff. They tend to highlight, here's what's bad that's going to happen to you, yada, yada, yada. Here's, like, this awful stuff that's going on. And they don't actually highlight the positives that could come from such a small change. They say, do you know, it's only, you only need to do a little bit, and it's, and, like, so much will happen. But the way I like to think about this type of stuff is sort of like sales. And it's also sort of why a lot of fitness professionals are really shitty at sales. They, like, don't know how to sell anything. They'll try and scare people into buying their products or their programs.
Yeah.
Like the top five reasons you're not losing fat type thing.
But yeah.
If you look at marketing research, it's funny. A negative type of title, like the five reasons you're not losing fat, will always underperform relative to the top five ways to lose fat faster. So you have a negative side versus a positive side. So people, a lot of fitness professionals will try and scare people into reading their work or buying their programs by saying the five reasons you're not doing this. But if they just changed it to the five ways to do it more quickly, then all of a sudden they would be more interested. I would love to see if you brought someone else in and had them paint the picture of what the actual positive benefits were with such little time investment in a way that really hit home with who they're talking to. So it would, which would mean you would have to really understand the person you're talking about and what they want. For example, if you're talking about someone, if you're talking to someone and just talking about how great it would be to have a six pack and be on the beach, but they don't give a shit about that, you're painting the benefits of the wrong picture, right?
Right. Right.
So really understanding who the person is, what they care about, if it maybe it could be if you know that that person has been very self-conscious to and avoiding taking pictures because they don't like how they look in pictures and they don't like seeing them, talking about something something as simple as you realize something as simple as 15 minutes a day, 3 days a week could literally be enough to get to the point where you are not only comfortable in pictures, but you can actually seek them out and enjoy them and feel comfortable in your own skin. And that way, when you have grandkids, your grandkids will be able to see pictures of you and point to you. And it won't be a source of embarrassment anymore. It'll be something that you can actually smile and laugh about and look back on. You know what I mean?
That's perfect. So that sounds,
It might not work. It's totally just a guess on my part. But what I like about this stuff is this behavior change it's actually why I wanted to get on the phone, because you brought it up and so few people actually talk about it and it's so important. I would really love to hear how that went for your family member or family members that you're talking about, because it might have a really big impact.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to do it, because I mean, that's one problem I run into, you know, like in a professional setting. You know, it's always like, you know, making sure that they see the benefits. And then with family, it's like all common sense and logic goes out the window. It's like, just do what I'm saying because I know better.
Right.
And and if somebody were to tell me that, I would 100% not listen to them.
But 100% not listen to them for sure. It's funny because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anything. You could literally be the president of the United States, but your brother, your sister, whatever, would always look at you as the little shit they knew when you were kids. And it's just when you have a family member, you could be the most well-respected fitness professional in the world. You could be a doc, you could be whatever, but a lot of times they're not going to listen to you simply because of that relationship you have as a family member, which is why, I mean, dude, like, I would love to go in there and try this with your family if I'm down there or whatever. I think that bringing somebody else in, someone who they don't know, would be really very powerful.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, maybe we could even do it over Skype or something like that.
Or, you know what I'm thinking? I mean, you're Maryland?
Yeah.
How far is that train from New York?
2 to 3 hours, depending on the train. 2 to 4 hours, I think.
Dude, I could legitimately, I'm very much thinking about just organizing a weekend at some point over the next month or so to just do that on a Saturday or Sunday, come down and do that. And I think that could be really powerful.
That would be huge. That would be. I will definitely make sure they're going to be ready for it.
That would be amazing. Like, we'll talk more about that.
That would be tremendous. Yeah. Yeah, that would be, because then even if they they'll trust what you're saying because you've been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
And you have such a presence, so it's not like there's somebody in off the street who literally has no presence, even though they might have a presence, but they just don't know of it.
You know, it would be a great experience, and if nothing else, to make sure that they leave knowing that you care about them so much that that you went out of your way to make that happen, I think would be very touching, and it would be a delicate area to tread and be very deliberate in saying, listen, if you want me out of here, I'll get out of here. This is not meant to embarrass in any way, but really like letting them know that this is coming from a place of love. And I think that would be a really good thing to try. And whether it's me or someone else, but this whole behavior change topic is very interesting to me. And number one, thank you for bringing it up. Is there anything else about behavior change that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, kind of the importance of positive thinking and like positive reinforcement when you're changing behavior, because there's, you know, it's like the old football coach back in the day who says how weak you are and how, you know, how bad you are, instead of being like, you know what, you're doing awesome, keep going. Like how much that positivity kind of reinforces the change and lets them make more progress versus breaking them down.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it really, so it's funny. As everything always does, it always depends, right? Which I hate to answer, but it's true. The funny thing is, there are some people who really thrive on that type of energy, where they just do better with that. And I think the best coach, it's the same thing with nutrition, with strength training. The best coach doesn't have one workout program, or they don't just follow like linear periodization or conjugated periodization or undulating or whatever. They will do whatever they think a client will respond to best. They don't only do 4 times a week workouts or 3 times a week workouts. They do, or 7 times a week. They do whatever will fit that individual client in that specific time of their life. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with behavior change. Number one, understanding individual differences overall, but also understanding where an individual is in that specific time of their life and within like, so for, at, like, and that's where understanding that at some point, sometimes giving someone knowledge-based education, like teaching them what is actually going on from a knowledge perspective, is very helpful. But that's where a lot of fitness professionals go wrong, where in terms of they spend so much time trying to teach people about, well, this is, you know, the Krebs cycle, and this is what happens when you eat a carbohydrate and it goes into your body and it turns into, like, and, hold on, like, they don't give a fuck.
Nobody, I've never heard anybody ask.
It's so far above and beyond what they even care about, never mind what they actually need to know about. If they gave a shit about that much, they would be in school for it. And then number two is going from understanding that it's not knowledge that they need, that it's more about, okay, how do we manage your mindset, your emotions? How can we practically apply this in a way that's going to help you stick with it long-term, rather than necessarily knowledge, is more about practical application. I think that's where a lot mm-hmm. of people lose. So going back to your question of, okay, so the positivity side of things, there are some people who will do very well with that negative beat down type thing. Generally, I've noticed they tend to be younger guys a lot of times. But I mean, they tend to be younger guys, the people who do, but I will say a lot of people who might seem like they would fit that bill, that younger guy like macho, whatever, they actually, they might seem like it and they might even respond well to that negative style initially. But a lot of times it's just a it's a facade. It's like an image they'll put up when in reality they would do much better overall with more of an encouraging, positive approach and almost letting them know that you don't need to have this facade anymore. This isn't doing it, like, this isn't necessary. You're you're putting on this thing for nobody. All I want to see is the real you. And when people can feel that, when people can really feel that you're being open and honest with them and that you're not putting on a facade and that you're not doing it, like, all of a sudden really things start to open up. I think that overall, by and large, from a generality standpoint, being able to make someone feel better about themselves will, I won't say always, but I'd say 9.9 times out of 10, help them move along the continuum of change and behavior towards positive habits.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like, just literally just being able to make someone feel better about themselves. And this goes to the whole concept of self-efficacy, which I think is, I've written on that a number of times. I still think this is probably the major thing that a lot of people don't talk about or even really understand in the fitness industry is self-efficacy is essentially, it's like self-confidence, but it's not 100% self-confidence. It's your ability, it's your belief in yourself to accomplish a given task. Not 100% what self-confidence is, but your ability to actually succeed. And one of the things that I'll do with clients, I did this for years, is I would, there are different ways to test someone's self-efficacy. And I would, throughout the course of working with someone from day one until the last day, test their self-efficacy through various ways. One very, very simple way to test self-efficacy is just to simply ask them, let me ask you this, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not confident at all, like completely and utterly zero confidence, I think I'm positive I'm going to fail, to 10, I am 100% positive, no questions, it's answer buts, I'm going to do this. How confident are you in your ability to, whatever it is, to follow these nutrition guidelines, to reach your goal, whatever? You ask them that, and then they would give you a number. And the people who scored, who said 7 or higher, were 90% more likely to actually succeed relative to the people who said 6 or lower. And my goal throughout the course of working with someone, rather than necessarily getting them to follow the nutrition guidelines or to follow a workout, was to get them to raise that number, because the more confident they became in themselves, the more likely they were to do that on their own. And it's always been a very interesting concept for me, because once you can get someone to raise that number, like, they're doing it without you having to say anything. So, and a really simple way to do that, this is probably one of my favorite, I'm glad we're talking about this, one of my favorite little tricks that you can use to immediately increase someone's self-efficacy, like literally immediately. Let's say you're talking to someone and they say 3, like I'm a 3. Most people, like, this is a motivational interviewing tactic that they use. They would say something to the effect of, when they say 3, most people would say, well, how come you said 3 and not 5? Or how come you said 3 and not, like, whatever?
Right.
And what that does is they then begin to tell you all the reasons why they don't think they're confident enough in themselves to succeed. They tell you all the reasons why they think they will fail. Whereas instead of saying that, why don't you just say, okay, 3. Why didn't you, like, how come 3 and not 1? And now all of a sudden they're going to say,
that's amazing.
It's a very simple trick. It's a very switch of the discussion, where now they say, well, listen, I mean, I've done it before. I stuck to it. It was hard, but, like, I honestly think if I actually give it some time, I think I can do it. And now all of a sudden they're talking themselves up and they're talking about
why they succeed.
It's one of those little things that you can do in a session. And you don't say after that, like, well, how do you feel now? Like, you don't say that. You sort of let them talk, and you find out where people have their self-confidence already, because they're going to talk about it. And they're going to talk about what they've already built up. And you build on that. And you use that further and further. you might not use it all in that one discussion, but you build on it and you save it and you keep using that further and further. And that type of discussion is so, so powerful, because then from there, you can, you save those in your notes on that file folder of that client or whatever. You say, okay, so this person has like stuck with it consistently before, and this is where they said they struggled, and this is where they know they can succeed. And then you can bring those up over and over and over again, consistent right. discussions. And that's how you can build up their self-efficacy over time. And when you can do that, their success gets more and more likely.
Dude, that is, that's the flip of the question. Is because, I mean, every time you're three, okay, what's it going to take to get you to a four? Literally, yeah. 100% of the time, that would be my next question.
And usually, they'll look at you and they'll just be like, I don't know. And they just feel so defeated. And they're like, yeah. they just sit there like all thinking about how hard it is to get from three to four, rather than just simply switching it. Great, you said three is better than one. How come you said three, not one?
And it's, that is...
It's always trying to switch that positive side to get them talk themselves up rather than looking down.
That is crucial.
That's cool, huh?
That is awesome.
I did not make that up. I can't take credit for that. It's a motivational interviewing technique. If you have not read motivational interviewing, I 100% recommend you do. Anyone listening, if you have not read motivational interviewing, get it. It's probably the most influential text I've read as a coach, and it has literally nothing to do with nutrition or strength training. It's all about human psychology, and specifically how to structure a conversation, how to speak with people in a way that gets them to make the decision, that gets them to feel confident in themselves, that gets them to make the choice rather than you telling them. It's so powerful, it's almost scary. And the more you can understand how to really talk to people and structure a conversation in a way that allows them to make the decision. Holy shit. Like people, like
wow.
you get to help people change in a way that they never would have otherwise. And the best part is it will be on their terms. They'll decide, they'll create the program, they'll create the guidelines, they'll do everything. You're just there facilitating it.
That is, I'm getting that book today.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I need.
If you Google search, top set, like best books for nutrition coaches, my article comes up. It's like the top seven best books for nutrition coaches.
Yeah.
And there's a link to the exact copy that I have on Amazon. And you can get it right there, or you could buy the hard copy, whatever you want. But it is bar none the best book I have ever read on coaching.
Done and done. That is awesome, man. Thank you.
Dude, thank you. I am, I'm going to get going. It's getting a little bit longer, and it's freezing outside.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's in LA, and it's freezing, but
oh.
I'm going to get going. Dude, thank you
for this wonderful call.
I appreciate your time. And anything you need, please let me know. I'm going to publish this. Nick, do you want to give your handles a shout out?
Yeah. On Instagram, it's at Nick Reese Fitness, and Facebook at Nick Reese Fitness. Twitter and Snapchat, same thing, at Nick Reese Fitness.
N-I-K-R-E-E-S-E Fitness. Dude, thank you so much for getting on. I really appreciate it. And thank you. I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Awesome. Thanks, brother. Have a good one.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
See you.